The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
It's Victor Dandridge, the hardest working man in comics, and you are listening to PVD Cast with John Orlando. Guys, I'm telling y'all it's the best thing on the entire interweb. Listen long, listen strong. John, it's all you, man.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I am your host and your podcast purveyor, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 234. As you're listening to this episode, first I'd like to say thank you for tuning in, and secondly, I hope you're doing well, I hope you are safe, and I hope you are healthy as we continue to deal with this pandemic. And my guest on this episode is an individual that knows kind of firsthand the damage, the destruction that COVID-19 or the coronavirus can cause. My guest is Mr. Colin Devonshire, who is the creator of a comic called By the Time I Get to Dallas. But he is also an emergency room physician in Boston. So the first few minutes of our conversation is quite insightful as Colin explains how this disease, how this virus has impacted him both personally and professionally. And I just want to say thank you to all those folks, just like Colin, all those frontline individuals, whether you're talking about the doctors, nurses, medical professionals, the grocery store workers, the mail carriers, anybody that's on the front lines of this pandemic, thank you very much for what you do. But Colin has a great book. And last July, he came on episode number 199 and chatted with me about book one of By the Time I Get to Dallas. And he is starting a Kickstarter for book two. And tomorrow, May 15th, is when the Kickstarter kicks off. So if you want to donate some money, if you want to pick up a really cool book and a really unique tale, then just go over to Kickstarter.com, search for By the Time I Get to Dallas, and you'll find it. And you can pledge if you'd like to. Colin and I have a great conversation about the book and about a little bit about hockey, too. He's a huge hockey fan. So, unfortunately, I think we would prefer to be kind of maybe busting each other's chops about our respective teams in the playoffs, but that's not happening right now. But nonetheless, it was a fantastic time talking with Colin, and I appreciate him taking some time out of his day to sit down and chat with me. But before we get to my conversation with him, I need to let you know about a couple of things. First, of course, is I need to let you know about World's Greatest Comics. As you know, they are a proud sponsor of the PVD Cast. And right now, they're struggling like many other businesses in America. So if you have some money and you want to get some cool comics, then you need to check out some of the auctions that World's Greatest Comics is currently doing. They have eBay auctions almost every single day, and they have a live Facebook broadcast of an auction every single Tuesday night at 8 p.m., To find out about this, all you got to do is go to their website, wgcomics.com, or go over to their Facebook page, which of course is at facebook.com/wgcomics. And there's all the details about those great auctions. And when the time comes, when life can go back to normal and you can leave the house and you can go and actually physically shop somewhere, stop on over to the store. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. And I again want to thank World's Greatest Comics for being a great sponsor. And another place that I'd like to give some thanks to is, of course, Red Line Radio, because that's where you can hear the PVD Cast every Monday night at 9:30, as well as all the other great shows that are on the network, whether you're talking about The Scoop, you're talking about, of course, What's Your Opinion, the Hot Tag Russell Corner, Canned Air Podcast. There are so many great shows and so much great music that I could spend like all day talking about it. So simply just go over to redlineradiollc.com. Or go to the Facebook page, which again is under the title of Redline Radio LLC. Or better yet, if you're an Android phone user, You can go over to Google Play. You can download the Redline Radio LLC app and take the station with you wherever you go. And coming soon is the Apple edition of that app. So just hang in there. If you're like me and you're an iPhone user, it's coming. It's coming. Just be a little more patient. But nonetheless, want to thank everybody at Redline Radio for having the PVD cast. I appreciate it. The feedback has been fantastic. I love every Monday night tuning in, chatting with some of the folks that are listening on the comment section and whatnot. So if you need another avenue to listen to the PVD cast, check it out on Redline Radio. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, I sit down with Colin Devonshire to talk about his comic, By the Time I Get to Dallas. All right, ladies and gentlemen, I would like to welcome once again to the PVD cast, Mr. Colin Devonshire. Colin, how are you doing, man?
I'm doing well. Good to talk to you again, John.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. And, you know, a lot has happened since the last time we talked.
A couple things.
You know, you were on last July, and, you know, the world has certainly turned kind of upside down. I'd like to start real quick by just talking a little bit about what you're dealing with, because for the new listeners who may be unfamiliar with you, you are an emergency room physician in Boston.
Correct. Yep.
And I assume your world has been absolutely bonkers over the last couple of months. So how are you doing?
I'm doing just fine. I'm healthy. My family is all healthy. I've been very lucky. You know, it's crazy because there's so many different aspects to this where this is tumultuous just for, you know, on a personal level and with you and your family and just all the day to day. But then if you add on to that, working in an emergency room during all of this, it's almost like they're two separate lives. But they definitely collide. I think March was an incredibly hard month preparing for what we were afraid we were going to see in the ER as we were watching events unfold in Italy. Italy was really the wake-up call as we saw how quickly that escalated and how quickly the hospitals were overwhelmed. So through March, you know, it was really a lot of people just doing a lot of work to try to figure out how to completely redo everything we do in the ER to be able to handle far more patients, far more sick patients, dealing with the protective equipment and how to circulate the patients so that people weren't getting each other infected and keep the staff safe. I mean, it was a massive amount of work for, I'm just kind of a grunt there, but a lot of the administrative people really, you know, worked there, you know, all day, every day, working their butts off to be prepared. And the unknown was really, really hard, just not knowing what you were going to walk into every day. It's actually become much easier as the unknown has become known. We now know this virus a whole lot better. Still a lot of things we don't understand. It's still a very weird virus that expresses itself in all sorts of odd ways. But at least now we've faced it every day and we kind of know how the systems work and understand it a little better. My particular hospital was very early on seeing a fair amount of COVID. Some of the very early cases were in our catchment area.
Oh, really?
But then, from a Biogen meeting, you may have heard about, was kind of one of the early spreading points when this first started. So we weren't sure what was going to happen, but that kind of, you know, the social distancing, people were able to contain that early on in our area. But then what you've seen is other neighborhoods that feed other hospitals that are more, you know, disadvantaged and densely populated really got hit hard. So neighborhoods like Chelsea and East Boston have seen incredibly high levels of infection and many, many sick people. And those have at times overwhelmed some of the other hospitals in the city. So we feel very lucky that our system in my hospital has worked well, and that you know, the primary care doctors and the nursing homes. We have a lot of nursing homes in our area that have really done a fantastic job of actually managing in place without overwhelming the hospitals. So it's been extremely stressful, and you know, just the way we practice medicine is now very different. It's very hard to walk into a room wearing, you know, three different masks, face shields, gowns, all this stuff. You feel like a robot walking into the room, which is hard. It's not the way we like to practice medicine. It's harder to make a connection with a patient when you're wearing all this stuff and you're trying to limit your amount of time interacting with them to prevent spreading of the infection. So there's been a lot of adjustment over the past couple of months. I feel like we kind of got through the acute worst of it, and now it's wondering how we're going to integrate this in the day-to-day going forward, because this virus is not going to go away anytime soon. It will continue to, I think, have kind of peaks and valleys. And so we'll just sort of need to work this into our everyday operations, how we kind of ramp up for it. So the personal has become a little easier, or the professional has actually become a little easier than the personal. The longer you're stuck at home, the longer, you know, the more activities, schools, summer camp, lessons, sports, all that stuff gets canceled. You know, that is really hard on everybody. And I'm in the same boat as everyone else when it comes to that. So,
yeah.
But as you were pointing out, you know, there's some hidden, there's some silver lining there. People, I think, need diversion, and some of the stuff that is still out there are comic books and podcasts. So, you know, it's a bumper crop of people sitting around looking at the internet, waiting for something to do. And so, hey, why don't we kickstart another comic book and do a podcast and have fun?
There you go. Well, before we move on to talking about the project, I do want to say sincerely, and I can only speak for myself, I'm not going to speak for everybody else, though I think that most Americans would agree with this sentiment. Thank you very much, Colin, for what you're doing, for putting yourself and your family at risk to help others. I mean, it's fantastic. And again, you are a brave soul. I don't know if there'd be too many folks that would put themselves in risk like you and many of the other medical professionals in the country. So thank you.
I appreciate that, John, very much.
So let's talk a little bit about the project. It is entitled By the Time I Get to Dallas, and book one came out a little while ago. And so for the new listeners, can you give like a little brief summary of the project?
Sure. So By the Time I Get to Dallas is based on the premise that 80% of Homo sapiens on Earth start migrating to a single spot on the globe. And in the midst of this migration crisis, a failing medical student named Rudy Deckert needs to hit the road to save or possibly destroy humanity. So that's the elevator pitch. It's a apocalyptic adventure story. Sounds pretty heavy, but it actually has a fair amount of heart and humor in it as well. And at the heart of it, it's the story of a young medical student learning to become a doctor, but just in the midst of a apocalyptic setting. So I started writing this story, I'm embarrassed to say how many years ago. I think the first seed of this story actually started in 2011. Started writing it more in earnest a couple of years later, when I was able to take a sabbatical from work for a month for creative writing, and got kicked around by publishers and you know, took some bruises along the way, but eventually got the story ready to actually print, and so brought it to Kickstarter just over a year ago, and we did fantastically well. We funded in 7 hours. We tripled our goals in terms of number of backers and funding. We got the book finished and printed and mailed out ahead of schedule in, I think it was late November. And that's now available for sale. And now we're doing the same thing with book two. So now I'm trying to just make it a routine where we, you know, build audience, make the book, launch it, rinse, repeat as many times as I can until the story's done. It's scheduled to be a 5 to 6 book series from beginning to end. So a long way to go, but just got to do one step at a time.
You got it. Let's talk about Rudy for a minute. For those that have not read the book, or at least book number one, I should say, he certainly is a unique character. And dare I say, he has some very, I don't know if stereotypical would be the best word, but I'm going to go with that. Stereotypical traits in regards to being a doctor. Did you model that after some of the folks maybe you've encountered in your medical career? Because he's kind of sure of himself. He's a little bit maybe arrogant, a little bit stubborn at the beginning of the book.
Yeah, you know, I think he's a jerk. And that was on purpose. So so my idea for this story, you know, started with the migration itself. And it wasn't until I kicked around for quite a while that I realized I needed a protagonist to really take us through this world. And then I hit on the idea of him being a medical student, which I didn't really want to do. Because frankly, when I started this, I was really trying to do something to take my mind off of medicine. I wanted a diversion from my everyday work. But you have to write what you know. And when I hit on the idea of him being a struggling medical student who needs to kind of learn a lesson, then the whole story became very clear to me that it was he needs to go out on the road and journey and do his sort of Luke Skywalker, become a Jedi type of thing. So to do that, to make a good arc for a story, you have to give them a long way to go. So he has to go from being pretty flawed in the beginning and overcome that. So my idea for him was to make him as much of a jerk as possible without hating him, without losing him, without losing the audience. So Rudy is your stereotypical medical student gunner is what we call them. So gunners are, you know, people who are just nose to the grindstone, everything they can do to get ahead, but maybe lack some of the social skills, lack some of the bedside manner, and maybe just in the end really just don't actually get it, that the real, you know, part of being a doctor, you know, depending on what it is you do, but the heart of it for me is how you take care of people and empathy and taking advantage of that one moment where you're there in a room with a patient and you are their doctor and you help them, even if it's just with your tone of voice. Rudy doesn't get that at all. Rudy thinks it's all about doing procedures and getting ahead and finding the right residency and sort of being hot shit. So that's what book one is. Book one is setting him up as this flawed character. And really the thing that I think, like the way I've tried to write it, is that keeps us rooting for Rudy is that he's funny. He's charismatic. He does, you know, he's not afraid to make a joke, take a joke. So in my mind, I was always trying to model him off of Ash from Evil Dead, the Evil Dead movies. I love those movies. Bruce Campbell.
That's a great way to describe him, actually. That's why I'm laughing. That is an accurate way to describe him.
I'm so glad to hear that. Yeah, because you certainly wouldn't think it, you know, when you first pick up the book, is that I'm aiming after Army of Darkness. But, you know, Ash is a complete schmuck, you know, in through all of those movies. But you're rooting for him because he cracks great one-liners. And, you know, in the end, when all else fails, he does the right thing. And so that's what I want Rudy to be. And the first book is tough because you got to, you know, he only gets a couple chances to kind of have those redeeming qualities in the first book. He's got to fall pretty far in his story before he starts to pull himself back up. So that's book one. Book two, he's going to fall even farther, but then start to kind of emerge and some of his qualities will start to become more apparent. So that's the idea with Rudy. I'm glad you kind of found that vibe. That's good.
Speaking of book two, are there going to be some new characters that will be introduced? I assume that, you know, as Rudy starts his journey, he's going to interact with a lot of different folks.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, you gotta have a team, right? I mean, this is the kind of the Golden Fleece sort of story, where he's got to go on the journey, meet the people that are going to help him on his way, and, you know, transform. So certainly in book two is where we eventually reward Rudy with actually getting to meet some people that are going to help him. So he's going to run into the kind of Abbott and Costello, R2-D2 and C-3PO type of pair of scientists named Goose and Rex, who are studying the human migration. They have some ideas about what they think is causing it and are collecting data that happens to put them on the road to Dallas as well. We should say Rudy's on his way to Dallas ostensibly to save his girlfriend, Karen, who is affected by the migration. She went off trying to get to Dallas, and he has some sort of vague ideas of how he can track her with his cell phone and meet up with her. And through all of this, what we're really wondering is, well, is Rudy a traveler like everybody else? He's coming up with all these reasons why he needs to go to Dallas, and maybe that's just like everybody else that's trying to go there. And so that's going to be a question that we keep kind of running into throughout the book. And then he'll also meet Anna. Anna is kind of the voice of compassion. She's been a Christian missionary, and she hooks up with the group as well as we go through book two. And so these are people that are going to help teach him various lessons along the way as we move out on the road in book two.
So you've mentioned two Star Wars references in our conversation so far.
Yeah, that's
so
about average for me in my day. At least about, you know, two an hour.
So I'm assuming that Star Wars is a big inspiration for you in this tale.
Sure. Yeah. So, you know, when I started this book, you know, I went back and kind of, I didn't know anything about fiction writing. I'd done a lot of like nonfiction and sort of creative nonfiction and essay writing in college and afterwards, but I never really wrote much fiction. So I didn't know how to really structure the story, but eventually came around, you know, by looking at basically screenplay structure and the three-act structure and different way, you know, the different sort of models of stories that are out there. And I realized that this needed to be that sort of travel adventure, the Golden Fleece kind of story. Star Wars is, you know, a classic example of that. The Matrix is another one that's, you know, a perfect, you know, perfectly structured type of Golden Fleece story. So Star Wars is just very easy to kind of grab onto when you say, well, who's this guy? Oh, he's Obi-Wan. You know, I forget what, there's all these archetypes of the various characters, like the skeptic and the sidekick, mm-hmm. and the, you know, and I've now forgotten them all, but at one point I'd really broken it down and figured out what each one of these characters' role was going to be, just like George Lucas did by reading all the Joseph Campbell, you know, sort of story kind of, you know,
story
story theory. Thank you. Exactly. So, you know, and I did it just a quick and dirty kind of version of it. But yeah, Star Wars is easy to hold on to. The Matrix is the easy one to kind of get in your head, you know. It's definitely written with that same kind of, you know, three-act kind of arc broken into a bunch of books.
Have you received any feedback from people who have purchased the book about, you know, what did they like about book one? What did they not like, et cetera, et cetera? Have you gotten a lot of feedback from it?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think the things that, you know, it's interesting. You try to find your audience, and when you, that's a hard thing to do, is knowing, well, who are the people that are going to like this book, and how do you find them? And that's kind of that's every author's kind of adventure. So I'm finding people that really gravitate towards like the mystery of it. I think the humor of it. I think that it's a little off the beaten path. It's not Caped Crusaders. And though it clearly kind of is riffing on zombie tropes, it tries to turn everything on its head, where the zombies are in this story are really the are sympathetic characters, or at least, you know, I want them to be, and they're not at least initially trying to kill people and eat their brains. So you kind of think we're getting set up to have this big slaughter fest with all these zombies, and in fact it's actually the opposite. They're more like in my mind, this story, it was more like buffalo on the Great Prairie that were kind of endangered and slaughtered. So I think people who have an eye for kind of a different twist on the apocalyptic kind of zombie story. So definitely, I think, you know, and then, you know, character-driven stuff, you know, Rudy and the whole medical component to it is not something that you've seen in a lot of comic books. So I'm finding, you know, quirky people who are looking for something a little fresh and a little different from, you know, the Marvel DC thing, but, and also kind of different from The Walking Dead. And I think some people are get that it is, I think when you pick up that the first book, you get a sense that this story knows exactly where it's going and that it's, I'm not making it up on the seat of my pants. And so I think people sense that they're getting dropped into a thing that's going to deliver. And that's, you know, I think a lot of it is the quality of the artwork. The artwork is fantastic. People pick it up and, you know, that's the crazy thing about a comic book is you can write the most amazing thing ever, but it's all the art. You've got to have the pictures that pop off the page immediately. So now's a good time to talk about the art team.
Yes, it is. That was going to be my next question, Colin. Let's talk about the art team.
So my amazing penciler has been with me from the very beginning. Juan Fran Moyano lives in Spain, and I found him through a Reddit community, and we started working on this. God, was it 2014 or 2000? Probably 2014, where we did an initial treatment, and he stuck with me through all of this. And the moment he started doing the first character sketches of Rudy, I knew he was the guy because he read my script and got kind of who these people were. And he's a very sensitive reader, really picks up on the emotion of the story. I think a lot of, you know, comic book writers are maybe just looking for the next action sequence, but he really wants to know what the drama of the scene is and find that. And that's amazing. So he has been knocking it out of the park. I can't wait for people to see, you know, the artwork for book two. And then his brother, Jay Moyano, is our colorist and does a great job with it. I get a lot of feedback on how good the color is. Dario Fast-Marin is the inker, does a fantastic job. All three of them live in Spain. And then rounding it out, we have James Reed, who lives here in the U.S., South Carolina, as our pro letterer. So I've been blessed that people who have much more experience and much more of a track record than me have been willing to go on this journey with me and keep working on books. But yeah, so they a good artist can make up for a lot of deficiencies in your writing. You know, if you're not sure what to do, just give them a big old splash page to draw. but they've been awesome. Yeah,
and I totally agree with you. I think if you have a very strong script, if you don't have strong art to go along with it, it diminishes your enjoyment while you're reading that comic.
Yeah, and there's so many, especially people that have been that are experienced readers. You pick up a book and you kind of, even subliminally, just kind of pick up the things that aren't quite right. And interestingly, one of the big things that people pick up on really quick is the lettering. It might seem like that's an afterthought, but it's actually not. Good lettering is really important to how you read the from panel to panel. And so I place a lot of value in those parts of the story. I'm a nitpicker for the lettering. So yeah, it's amazing. It's all these little choices and little decisions that when you actually pick up the book kind of tell you, does it kind of meet that minimum for like a high quality story? And and it's a team approach, which is sometimes hard for creative people, you know. It's not just sitting and writing the great American novel. It's writing the great American novel and handing it to a half dozen people to go, you know, make it for you. Which is scary but really fun when you have people that do a good job.
I'm going to interrupt my conversation with Colin for just one moment to tell you about World's Greatest Comics. Now, while the store isn't open right now because of the pandemic, they are still selling lots of great comics online through a variety of different auctions. They got eBay auctions almost every single day, and every Tuesday at 8 on their Facebook page, they do a live auction. It's great fun. It's great interaction with Jeff and the folks over there at the store. So just check them out online at wgcomics.com or find them on Facebook. Just search for WG Comics. And eventually, when things get back to normal, you can visit them at the store. And the store is, of course, located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. And no matter how you interact with the fine folks of World's Greatest Comics, let them know that you heard about the store from yours truly right here on the PVD Cast. Let's talk about the Kickstarter campaign that's launching on May 15th, correct?
1 week from today on Kickstarter, correct.
So
we're a podcast, so we're not in real time. But yeah, May 15th. Sorry, I just realized the suspension of disbelief here. It launches on May 15th, 1 week from the day that we are recording this, but it will run for 1 month through June 14th. So if this runs sometime in the next 5 weeks, you'll have a shot at getting in on the Kickstarter fun.
Nice save. Nice save.
Yeah.
People know.
Yeah, yeah. Figuring this thing out here.
I think pretty much the gig is up. I think most people know that podcasts are recorded sometimes weeks in advance. It's all good.
Not my parents. My parents won't get it. So.
Well, I'm still oftentimes having to re-explain to my mother what a podcast is. So
right, yeah.
It's fine. I understand. So what kind of perks, what kind of things can folks expect when they check out the Kickstarter campaign?
Cool. So the first thing to be aware of is that we're calling this By the Time I Get to Dallas, Book 1 plus 2, ER Doc Apocalypse Continues. So the first important thing to know is that you have an ample opportunity to get the first book as part of this campaign. So you've missed nothing if you're getting in now. So you'll have access to both standard and variant cover editions of both the first and second book. So, as well as digital, if that's how you roll, you can download all of this stuff. It'll be 140 pages of downloadable material, I believe. And then on top of that, we have a whole companion book called The Trinity Project. And that's where my life gets really, really complicated, where I have a whole prequel story for By the Time I Get to Dallas that delves more into the background of this migration, how it came to be. And I started writing that kind of for fun on the side to kind of keep moving while I was waiting for my art team to get up and running on Dallas. Started it as a web comic, just releasing occasional scenes online. And I packaged that up together as a book for the first Kickstarter. And I want to do the same thing for the second Kickstarter. And the idea is that these two stories will be released kind of in parallel, and the stories will start to come together along the way if I can manage it. So it's become this sort of like lost level complexity of writing, which I'm sure I don't have the skills for. But I'm going to keep going with it as long as I can. So Trinity Project is a whole prequel comic book that's actually going to come with every print order of By the Time I Get to Dallas. So if you order By the Time I Get to Dallas, you also will get the prequel comic, which should be, you know, at least 30, possibly up to 40 pages. So that's cool. And then we've got some crazy perks. One of the things we're doing with this one is not only can you get a cameo, get your face in the book, you can get your face on the cover of book two. So we had an opportunity to have people do cameos in the last book, and it sold out incredibly fast. Everybody wanted to be in the book. My boss was mad at me because he missed out, and he wanted me to make a whole other page just for him. It was a little hard not to say yes to that. So I wanted to have more of those opportunities for people to be in the book. And then as Juan Fran and I were working on the cover, you know, I realized, you know, what if we took out these people that are on the cover and made them, you know, our fans? So that's not a small task. It basically means paying my guys to kind of do a whole new cover, because it's really hard to just drop in art like that. So there'll be, I think, a total of maybe 8 people that can be on the cover in a very dramatic, exciting scene. And that will be the main standard cover that's going out to everybody. If we ever get it in shops, it'll be your face on in the shop. And that's a perk I don't think I've ever seen on Kickstarter, because basically it's complex and costly and screws up your whole production schedule and is really a dumb idea, but that's how I roll. So I got to get my boss on the cover of my book this time.
Yes.
So all sorts of cool stuff.
Well, you know what? We're going to talk some more about the Kickstarter campaign here in a minute. But since you touched on the Trinity Project, I had a really big question for you because, you know, truth be told, I reread Dallas Book One this week in preparation for this this conversation because it has been, well, almost, you know, 8 months, 9 months since I read it.
Mm-hmm.
And in the Trinity Project, you have a character who is an archaeologist. Did you have to do a lot of research for that particular character to know, you know, what she's talking about? Does this timeline match up? So I imagine you had to do quite a bit of research.
Yeah. So with my first book, with Dallas, obviously I'm hewing pretty close to what I know as a doctor. Rudy is not me. He's much more of a dickhead. But he's a doctor, you know, so, and he's interested in, you know, kind of emergency medicine and trauma and this kind of thing. So I was definitely going with what I know. I really wanted to try to break out of that and try to be a real writer and actually try to be, you know, writing my protagonist as a something kind of different that was going to make me challenge myself. So I chose number one, a woman, number two, an archaeologist, and number three, she is Guatemalan. She is a, immigrant from Guatemala. She's what would be qualified as a dreamer, coming here illegally as a small child. So that timeline actually takes place back in the 70s through the 90s. So I don't think the dreamer thing was really a thing yet. But I really wanted to sort of stretch my kind of writing task by taking that on. So the archaeology part of it actually was fairly easy for me. I was a biology, geology, and geophysics major in college. And my major research focus was actually paleontology and mammal migration, which dovetails pretty damn well with the story, strangely enough. So a lot of that stuff is me getting to actually geek out on stuff that I know a little bit about. And I definitely play fast and loose with the science of it, with the details of sort of human migration and how and where it happened, but it's plausibly, you know, it's all plausibly kind of based on real stuff. It definitely refers to real digs and real science techniques. And in the heart of it, actually, the whole kind of middle component of the story is really kind of like nerding out science investigation, getting to the bottom of this. It's really more of like a kind of like a science thriller that then will dovetail into what we see in Dallas. So the archaeology part of it is super fun for me. Like I literally, in the script I sent to the artist a couple of weeks ago, it has a picture of Beringia. Beringia was this landmass, you know, connecting modern day Alaska to modern day Russia, Kamchatka. And it's across this land bridge that people, you know, first crossed over into North America, or so it's thought. And there's a lot of theories about how and when that happened. And I play with that and make it part of the whole migration story. So that part was easy. Writing as a Guatemalan woman is definitely new and hard. And I don't really know how to do that. I definitely do a lot of research in sort of the history of Guatemala, what was going on at that time. I was researching various neighborhoods that she might, you know, live in Dallas during the story. I was on Zillow looking at kind of working class houses in that area, took pictures of houses in Zillow and sent them to my artist. So it's been really, really fun. Luckily, my son and daughter are both fairly fluent in Spanish from school. They go to a dual language school. So I'll be relying on them to kind of work in the sort of interactions between Gabby and her father. Her father is lives with her and speaks more Spanish. And so I want to kind of sprinkle in, you know, the way that they would talk to each other and with a mix of both languages that the reader can follow as well. So yeah, you know, I started it hoping it would be kind of low stakes just as a web comic, but now that it has to come out with every Dallas book, I kind of realize I have to actually make it good. But that's okay. That's the challenge of it.
So for the second Kickstarter, will we also get another installment of Rise of the Banana Man?
Excellent question, John. In fact, I have in my hands, as we speak, the latest pages of Banana Man number 2, The Ripening. So really, this is by far the best part of all of this comic making I've been doing is that my son is making a comic that is 10 times better than mine. So my son Ezra is currently 12, and he, a couple of years ago, and he's very into comic books and very creative. And a couple of years ago, he came up with this character named Banana Man, who's a banana who has gained superpowers in a space explosion. And he started drawing this little kind of manga-sized comic book, and he was sort of cranking out pages as I was gearing up to do my Kickstarter. And so halfway through Kickstarter, I said, look, let's make this a reward. It was mostly my friends and family that were supporting us at that time anyway. A lot of them were going to love to have something from Ezra. So we made a 16-page black and white manga-sized comic book that we made as a tier, and a lot of people ended up buying in on that tier. And I had some people, total strangers, just seeing on Kickstarter, like, oh, well, how do I get the Banana Man? Is that going to be in the, in the digital download? And it's a great book. Like, Ezra has a really good eye for, like, he gets his page turns just right. He knows where, he gets the pacing of a comic book. He has great one-liners. So Banana Man is descends to Earth, and when he crashes on Earth, he causes a huge disruption, a big hole, big damage to downtown Boston, and then eventually is put on trial. And the prosecuting attorney eventually loses the case and is so distraught by losing this case and the harm to his reputation, he becomes evil lawyer. An evil lawyer is now Banana Man's nemesis. And as we head into book two, the stakes are going to raise. As I look at the page right now, it gets a little darker, violent. But I'm making Ezra crank out Banana Man number two, The Ripening, and that will be available. Now I've managed to give myself three different comic books that I'm producing at once in the midst of coronavirus hell. So that was good planning by me.
Well, let's switch gears for a moment before we start wrapping things up. Sure. Last time you said that you really, really wanted to talk about some hockey, and unfortunately,
that's not working out for us.
No, unfortunately,
the same thing.
Unfortunately, we got screwed on that endeavor.
that is really up there on the things that have really hit me hard. I'm a big, big Boston Bruins fan. We're having a great year. I watch pretty much every game. I'll set it to record when I come home from a shift late at night. I crack a beer and I sit and I watch the game. It's a big part of my kind of ritual. The kids really like watching hockey with me. We all will watch together. It's a big loss for me. Other sports, not so much these days, but the Bruins, we are big fans of. So I've actually been watching the replays of the 2011 Stanley Cup run that they've been playing here. I've got it all recorded. And
the infamous bite, isn't that the that is the series, bite?
Just going back and watching the just watched game three of the Stanley Cup Finals. I forget which game the bite was in. But man, that was the one where the Bruins, I kind of woke up and took it to them 8-1. And so I've been getting by reminiscing with that. But, it came at a bad time, man. We were having a really good season. Still hopeful that they'll get the rest of the season, if not just the playoffs in. But I don't know. I don't know how it's going to work out and how we're going to look when we get back in, into the swing of things. Will Rask still be sharp? It's hard to know. We've got a little bit of an aging team. I'm not sure if that's good or bad if I take this much time off. So,
yeah, I have been enjoying some of the replays, but I really, really dig the ones that they've been replaying from the 70s and the early 80s, the helmetless era. I'm fascinated by that, what do you think the future holds for sports post COVID-19? Do you think, you just mentioned you're not sure the status of the NHL. What's your personal opinion? Do you think about with sports? And
so, you know, I think you can't underestimate that these people are making millions and millions of dollars. So they're going to find a way to get these games on one way or another. Mm-hmm. I think it will probably be without fans in the stands for a while. Mm-hmm. I think you'll see them maybe. It sounds like there's some kind of ways you can do this by kind of sequestering groups of teams off in one place and doing, you know, rigorous testing and symptom monitoring, like they're starting to do in Korea, South Korean baseball. So I think that there are enough millionaires and billionaires that are motivated they'll find a way. I think it'll be weird. And I can't, it's really hard to imagine a Stanley Cup playoff game with nobody in the stands. Yeah. It's just kind of, it's kind of weird to contemplate. When it'll happen, I'm not sure. You know, I think every league is going to try to figure it out. It might, you know, whether some of these seasons will actually happen at all. I don't know. But I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful that they figure it out enough, and that the testing is, you know, if they get, you know, some of these tests now are getting much more sensitive and much faster. So I think that there's a way that they'll find a way to make their money back. I hope.
I'm going to ask this question, even though we probably don't know the answer to it. Do you have any upcoming appearances where you might be with Book One? Or I assume, much like many other the creators I've talked to over the last couple of months, that's kind of up in the air.
Yeah, you know, I have not really worked that into my game yet. I've never done a convention as a exhibitor. I've been to a few for fun.
Is that a goal, you know, maybe for the rest of the year, maybe to get into a couple of cons?
I don't know if
it's
going to happen this year. You know, I think there's no rush on that for me.
Sure.
I think if I build, you know, I'd rather be at a convention table with two books than one, or three mm-hmm. books than two. So whenever I get there, I get there. It's debatable how efficient, you know, conventions are in this day and age, depending on what it is you do. For a solo creator with one book, you know, I need to find some kind of less expensive local conventions and give it and just sort of do it just to do it. They're useful for making connections, meeting people. I mean, I met some of the most important people in my creative process through conventions, where I did go to shop my book around a few years ago at Boston Comic Con. But it's also a young man's game, where to spend a weekend, you know, at a table doing this, weekends are really, really precious for me.
Sure,
I only get
sure.
half of everybody else's weekend. So I definitely want to do it. It would make me incredibly happy to sit at a table with my son with both of our books out there and selling them for the weekend. He pitches the hell out of his book. He does a great job with it. So I really want to do that. So when conventions happen again, I hope to be there. But right now I'm kind of more about, you know, maximizing the Kickstarter and maximizing just making the product really good, because I know that the long tail of this project will still be there. You know, the more books I have, the more I'm proving that this thing is real, and then it'll be easier and easier to sell. But yeah, mm-hmm. no, I love going to conventions. They're a blast.
Yeah. Well, and I think you have a very bright idea in that, you know, when the time comes, those small localized shows are probably the better way to go, rather than the big gigantic extravaganzas that some companies put on. Smart idea on that. Just taking your time on that. So let's wrap things up here. Where can folks find out about, by the time I get to Dallas, through social media, websites, et cetera, et cetera?
Sure. If you want to find out, first of all, the best thing to do, if you want all of Book One, as well as a preview of Book Two, you can download it all for free through my landing page, which is pittdocpress.com/DallasFree. You just look up pittdocpress.com. It'll get you also to our sign up page. But pittdocpress.com/DallasFree, you can get the whole darn book. And similar to that, pittdocpress.com/Dallas2Launch. So Dallas, the number two, launch, will bring you to our Kickstarter page. which is right now a coming soon preview. But if you then click there to be notified, you'll get notified when we launch, which is on May 15th through June 14th. But basically, if you type in Pit Doc Press, P-I-T-D-O-C-P-R-E-S-S, Pit Doc, which is kind of a colloquial term for an ER doctor, Pit Doc Press is my my publishing company. So if you just type that in, Google it, you should find your way there. On Facebook, we have a Facebook page called By the Time I Get to Dallas, and that's easy to remember, though hard to type. And everything we have is there. And then on Instagram, I'm pit.press on Instagram, and we've got links there in the bio, learning how to do all that stuff. So yeah, those are the ways to find me on this book.
All right, there you go. Well, Colin, thank you very much, man, for taking some time out of your very, very busy schedule. And thank you again for doing everything that you're doing to help the people in your neighborhood, in your region. Just thank you for being a frontline worker in this terrible, terrible and traumatic time that we are in. With that, Colin, anything else you want to say real quick?
No, thank you. And thank you for, you know, continuing doing what you're doing by entertaining us. You've been cranking out episodes, and we need it. We all need diversion, entertainment, and it's really nice when it's real and you can feel it's coming from, you know, one person, a couple people, as opposed to kind of, you know, big network generated stuff. I think knowing that people are just doing what they do, remaining creative, staying themselves in some way is just nice to know, and that by being creative like that, you're being a leader. We can be leaders and showing people that it doesn't have to be doom and gloom. You can still kind of be yourself, and that's part of my impetus with doing all this, is I've been just trying to crank away just to show that we can do it, and you've been doing the same, and I appreciate it, so thank you.
Thanks, man. All right, with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break, and on the other side of the break, I will return to wrap up the episode. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. My conversation with Colin Devonshire, talking about his comic, By the Time I Get to Dallas. And I appreciate Colin taking some time out of his busy schedule to sit down and chat with me once again. And I urge you, go on over to the archives of the PVDcast and listen to his first appearance last July, episode 199. And with that, don't forget as well, if you want to help Colin out, just search for By the Time I Get to Dallas after you go to Kickstarter.com and give whatever you can give and get some cool perks in return. So with that being said, I need to let you know where you can get in touch with me if you would like to. You can shoot me an email. JohnOrlando@PVDcast.com is that email address. You can find me on Twitter. My personal Twitter handle is @PVDMVP. You can leave me a message over on the Facebook page, that of course being facebook.com/PVDcast, or you could even leave me a message over on the Instagram, that of course also is @PVDcast. And don't forget, there's a ton of different ways where you can hear this great, great podcast. Obviously, PVDcast.com, the online home of yours truly, is a great place to start, but it's also available through all of the major podcast platforms, such as Spotify, Deezer, iHeartRadio, Stitcher Radio, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, SoundCloud, Pod Paradise. Basically, wherever you find podcasts, all you got to do is search for PVDcast. Sometimes you have to throw my name after it, PVDcast, John Orlando, and you're sure to find it. And don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. So it helps me out with the ratings, so to speak, or the standings or the algorithm. And it also, when you subscribe, make sure you never miss an episode. And don't forget that you can also hear the PVDcast every Monday night at 9:30 on Redline Radio, RedlineRadioLLC.com, or Redline Radio on Facebook, or download the app. It's Redline Radio LLC in the Google Play Store, and you can take the station with you wherever you go. So with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to get on out of here. I thank each and every one of you for listening, and I will chat at each and every one of you later. Stay righteous, stay independent, and stay safe and healthy.